Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, helping businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available at abletrust.org or 850-224-4493. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Some late-breaking developments in Florida's ongoing struggle with congressional redistricting.
They may just take this and, if they approve it, put it into effect rather than going through the process of holding hearings and doing further meetings.
Also this week, while some worry a plan to reduce Florida property taxes while increasing sales taxes is regressive, others argue there are ways to work around that.
If you were only buying the things that you need and you no longer have to pay any property tax, you could live exclusively tax-free.
We'll also get an update on how state lawmakers are trying to bring health care to more people without expanding Medicaid coverage, and hear about a University of South Florida protest over naming a building after a congressman. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Well, Nick Evans, there is an old truism in the news business, which is nothing good ever happens late on a Friday. And here, as we were going into Capitol Report, we had everything just about locked down. Something broke late this afternoon that had to do with the congressional redistricting of Florida. What's the latest?
Well, to put it real simply, the League won. Judge Lewis came out with a ruling saying that essentially the League's version of the line between District 26 and 27 was more compliant with Tier 2 standards, and so he's suggesting the Supreme Court go with that. Now, in his ruling, Judge Lewis says that he likes the House's version of the map better than the Senate proposals. He says it's close, but he thinks that the Senate didn't do a good enough job of explaining why it made its changes. Now, the other thing that he points out is the plaintiff maps. They agreed with the House version of the map. That's important because he argues in his finding that he can only rule on disputed issues. So the fact the plaintiffs agreed with most of the House version of the map gave it a bit more weight. He also emphasizes the importance of Tier 2 compliance. Now, Tier 2 has to do with compactness and whether or not borders follow municipal boundaries, whether they follow roads. He said that the staffers, the people in the legislature who drew the maps that started out the process, didn't do a very good job with 26 and 27. He said their work was cursory. They didn't do enough to come up with different ideas for where to draw the line and how to draw the line to boost Tier 2 compliance. He says that he looks at what the League of Women Voters did, and their mapmaker had no problem, and he sent it to the Supreme Court.
Okay, so where do we go from here now?
Well, that's a really good question, because I don't know. The lawyers don't know. Actually, here's David King, lawyer from the League of Women Voters, speaking after the final hearing in the redistricting case.
They could ask the parties to make written briefing on the issue. They could have oral argument, or they could just get Judge Lewis's recommendation and make their own decision. I don't know how that. Each step is a new step in places that nobody's gone before.
So, as you can hear, it's in the Supreme Court's court now. and we'll see what they do with this. Considering this has been going on for so long, and as we reported earlier, supervisors of election across the state are asking to have a map finalized and in place by December 1, they may just take this, and if they approve it, just put it into effect.
And still more fun to come, because we have another special legislative session coming up about state senatorial districts, and we get to do that process.
Oh, yes. The fun never ends.
Florida Public Radio's Nick Evans. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks.
Floridians could stop paying property taxes if they're willing to pay more than double the current state sales tax. Regan McCarthy reports a group of lawmakers is looking into plans that could make serious changes to the state's taxing system.
Chair of the House Finance and Tax Committee, Matt Gaetz, says he knows doubling the state sales tax probably wouldn't be, in his words, palatable. But he says there are a few other solutions that could be. For example, he says the state could consider a $1 million exemption.
What that means is that all property in the state of Florida that was valued under $1 million would not have property taxes associated with those parcels. If we were to do that, you might want to make a note of this in your file, 98% of parcels in the state of Florida would not have a property tax burden attached to what they were doing.
The $1 million exemption would mean the state sales tax would need to be increased by about 5%, raising the tax to 11%. Or, Gates says the state can offer a $500,000 exemption, which would mean no tax would be required for about 95% of Florida properties. To make up for that, lawmakers would need to increase the sales tax by 4.36%. Or there are other ideas for making up the tax, like one from Keystone Heights Republican Representative Charles Van Zandt. It would increase the tax base by taxing services.
Meaning for you guys that if you went to Men's Warehouse and bought a suit, you'd pay our sales tax on that. And if you got a haircut on the way home, you would pay the same amount of tax on the haircut. You'd get the sales and service tax joint.
Van Zandt says under that plan, the state could reduce all property tax for residential and commercial properties by bumping the sales tax up to 8.5%. Something to keep in mind is that's the base rate. Currently, some communities collect a sales tax above the base rate through what are called local option sales taxes. Gates says he has some concerns about Van Zandt's plan because he's worried about how people would react to the idea of being taxed for services that are not currently taxed.
I'm very reticent about asking you to vote to tax activities that are not currently taxed now. I think that there are many Floridians who would find that to have substantial shock value.
Meanwhile, others, like Democratic Representative Hazel Rogers, are raising concerns about Gates' plan for a sales tax increase. Rogers worries higher sales taxes could disproportionately impact low-income Floridians.
Sales tax, everyone pays sales tax. Not everyone is an owner of real property. So we are now doing this switch that everyone, rich, poor, and poorer, will now have to pick up what those of us who are able to own real property will now switch to those.
But Republican Representative Matt Caldwell says sales taxes offer people more flexibility than they might have with a fixed property tax. He says people pay a sales tax when they choose to by making a purchase, and he says many necessities are already tax-free. Plus, he points out the legislature often offers tax-free holidays for other items such as clothing.
Medicine, rent, food are fully exempt in our tax code, and thereby, under this type of proposal, if you are truly poor, you could actually live tax-free in the state of Florida.
Representative Gates admits the issue will take many hours of fine-tuning, but it's a concept he's hoping the House Finance and Tax Committee can dig into more deeply during the coming legislative session. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, another deadly campus shooting, this one in Arizona. Meanwhile, Florida lawmakers keep pushing for less restrictive gun laws.
The best way I can protect our citizens is to get them engaged in protecting themselves. And this creates the difference between a hard target and a soft target for a violent criminal.
There's a gun-related bill with unlikely bedfellows that aims to change Florida's 1020 life law.
We wanted to bring an act forward to say that net we've cast that really was targeted to hardened criminals is capturing innocent people that just the only crime of defending themselves.
The legislative tap dance continues in Tallahassee, how to provide more people with health care without expanding the Medicaid program.
There is a real problem out on the horizon from our state budget standpoint, and we have an obligation, I think, to manage it before it becomes a crisis.
Controversy erupts over naming a University of South Florida building after a deceased congressman whose legacy is not celebrated by the LGBT community.
This building is just, you know, a continuation of the sort of oppression that we face every day.
And we'll head out along Northwest Florida's iconic Apalachicola River to get the latest on the decades-old interstate water war.
Support for Capital Report is provided by CGI, a partner to government and industry delivering built-for-government information technology solutions for nearly 40 years. CGI, committed to providing IT results Florida can count on. Details on the web at cgi.com.
Officials in Arizona today were investigating a deadly campus shooting a little more than a week after a mass shooting on an Oregon campus. With that as a backdrop, Florida lawmakers are still more determined than ever to loosen gun control laws, as we hear from Jim Ash.
Hours after a mass shooting on an Oregon campus, President Barack Obama was heading to the White House press room to plead for stricter gun control and chide the NRA. Beltway observers called it one of his finest performances.
And this is not something I can do by myself. I've got to have a Congress and I've got to have state legislatures and governors who are willing to work with me on this.
A few days after that, a House committee in Tallahassee was loosening restrictions and siding with the industry. A bill allowing concealed weapon permit holders to openly carry their handguns passed 8-4.
I do believe that this bill enhances the rights of citizens and vindicates and restores rights that have been granted not by government but by God.
Republican Matt Gaetz of Fort Walton Beach said he had no second thoughts about introducing his bill so soon after the Oregon mass killing.
We can't make public safety and public policy decisions based on political atmosphere. We have to do the things that will make our streets and communities safer.
Gaetz's bill appears to be on safe ground, but it has its critics. Sean Bartlett, a retiree from Orlando, worries an armed citizenry will scare away tourists.
What does that say about Florida? We're sunshine. We're beaches. We're beautiful.
And Gary Hunter with the Florida Chamber of Commerce worries about private property rights. Businesses want to be able to turn away gun-toting customers.
That's an important issue to many businesses who feel like that's something that could be of concern to them.
At least one Democrat predicts pickpockets will have easy access to loosely holstered weapons. Others warn it'll be harder for police to tell a lawfully armed gun owner from an assailant. But National Rifle Association lobbyist Marion Hammer says the opposite is true.
Of course not. A bad guy's not going to stand around at a crime scene with a gun waiting for cops to get there. Only good guys will.
Brevard County Sheriff Wayne Ivey agrees so strongly with the bill, he traveled more than 600 miles to testify. Arming civilians will make attackers think twice, Ivey says.
The best way I can protect our citizens is to get them engaged in protecting themselves, and this creates the difference between a hard target and a soft target for a violent criminal.
Florida open carry lobbyist Eric Friday worries about Florida's image, but in a much different way.
Florida is one of only five states left in this country that does not allow open carry in some form. And I don't like being in the same league when it comes to gun laws with California, New York, and Illinois.
Gaetz's bill may be more controversial after the recent tragedies, but not as much as another gun lobby favorite, allowing guns on campus. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Florida lawmakers are still pushing a bill aimed at changing the state's minimum mandatory sentencing rules. As Sasha Cordner reports, it comes on the heels of a recent decision by the state's executive board requesting the early release of a Florida man who got a 20-year prison sentence for firing a warning shot.
Ever heard of a gun-related bill that could bring together the NRA, state attorneys, public defenders, police chiefs, the Sheriff's Association, among other stakeholders? Well, there is such a bill by Jacksonville Republican Senator Aaron Bean that recently passed its first Senate committee.
All of these groups lined up and said, this is going to bring common sense, this is a great way to do it, and we passed our first committee, so we're pretty jacked up.
He's talking about a bill that now eliminates 10/20 life as a penalty for aggravated assault cases. Originally, it gave judges discretion in all cases associated with the minimum mandatory sentence. Polk City Republican Representative Neil Cumby's bill has not had a first hearing in the House, but he says he can't wait to make that change to his bill.
It was wonderful news that we're going to be able to remove aggravated assault from the 10/20 life statute.
For example, Cumby says he's known cases where a person can serve 2 years of a 3-year prison term for aggravated robbery with a firearm. Then there's other cases like Orville Lee Woolard charged with aggravated assault.
You look at a case like Lee Woolard, who is sitting in prison today. He fired a gun in his home, which he says was self-defense. He would not accept a plea deal, and consequently, the judge had no choice but to impose the mandatory 20-year sentence on him.
Woolard's case was recently before Florida's Executive Clemency Board led by Governor Rick Scott. Woolard's daughter, Sarah, is among those who spoke on his behalf.
The day that my dad shot the hole into the wall, me and my boyfriend were having an argument in my room.
She says she and her boyfriend later got the ball rolling on trying to get emancipated from her parents by talking to police about the incident about a week later.
Since 2008, I've lived with the guilt every day that because of my selfishness for wanting to be emancipated and just wanted to be independent, that my dad has now spent 7 years in prison, which is life that he's never going to be able to get back. And I know that I was a horrible daughter back then.
But Polk County State Attorney Jerry Hill says the family's version of the events is far from the truth.
I simply would suggest to you that this defendant is not the poster child. He wasn't defending himself, and he wasn't defending his family. This defendant, or this victim, was gone. It was unnecessary, and I suggest it's not a murder charge by probably 3 or 4 inches.
And the governor denied clemency for Woolard. Still, Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley says regardless of the bill's inspiration, the merits of the bill itself are sound. He's the one who got all the parties to agree on narrowing the bill.
What they're saying is that it's appropriate in certain cases for a judge to take a guilty verdict, and when it comes time to sentence the individual, not be hamstrung by a law that says 20 years is the only appropriate sentence for this individual. If the individual has no prior record, if no one was hurt, these are all mitigating factors that it's appropriate for, I think, for a judge to consider when determining what is a just sentence.
The bill, if it became law, would take effect immediately. But what about those who've already been sentenced under the statute, like Woolard? Bradley says while he's not working on legislation on behalf of any one individual, he says it's worth a discussion to look into cases that previously happened. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
Florida lawmakers are bracing for budget holes despite figures showing the state could end up with another year of surplus. Lynn Hatter looks at the health care proposals making their way through the Florida legislature as lawmakers look for ways to cut health costs without accepting billions in federal dollars to expand Medicaid.
Florida lawmakers have started rolling out several proposals and ideas to cut or curb health care costs. The move comes as one of the biggest parts of the state budget, health care, gets bigger. State economist Amy Baker says that's due to a number of reasons, but there are two other factors that have been driving state conversations in recent months.
And the fourth one is prescription drug costs overall. But the other thing that's going on is we've definitely seen some level shifts. Part of it is that we just have more people demanding health care now.
The demand growth is due to more people getting insurance through the Affordable Care Act and some learning they're eligible for Medicaid. The state has approved rate hikes for most of its insurers, including those charged with running Florida's Medicaid Managed Care program. Some companies have said the surge in demand, especially in Medicaid, is causing financial losses. But Republican State Senator Joe Negron says the insurance companies are flush with cash.
Insurance companies are now so profitable as a result of the Affordable Care Act, that they're buying each other, as you mentioned in your presentation. Aetna is buying Humana for $37 billion. And then Anthem is getting ready to acquire Cigna for $54 billion. So these are all very good developments for the insurance companies, for their shareholders.
But Negron argues it's not good for physicians and patients. There are growing problems with doctors who say they're not paid properly for their services. And patients have complained of narrow networks and more restrictions on medications and services. Now the state is trying to figure out what to do about it. Florida will have a budget surplus next year, but most of it will be sucked up as health care costs grow due to more expenditures and the loss of a federal program that supported hospitals treating low-income patients. Another round of cuts to the low-income pool is coming, and most lawmakers have dismissed talks of using other federal dollars to make up the difference. Instead, as Senate Appropriations Chairman Tom Lee points out, they'll be looking at alternatives.
There are a lot of proposals out there from CON to scope of practice, having hospitals post their rates, to group health insurance, and And there's reasons why there's so much focus on things like those.
Many of these proposals have been circulating for years, and several were put forth by the State House of Representatives last year, but they didn't get traction in the Senate. Meanwhile, Senator Lee says the plans will be reviewed and judged based on how well they can bring down costs. He says he wants to address it this year before it becomes an even bigger problem for the state. Medicaid is already making up the largest share of Florida's overall budget. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
A group of University of South Florida students is gathering signatures to change the name of a building on campus that's named after a former member of Congress who is also part of the Johns Committee that persecuted gay and lesbian students and faculty in the 1950s and 60s. Sean Canan from member station WMNF in Tampa reports the USF administration is rejecting the students' demands to rename the ROTC building on campus.
C.W. Bill Young was a longtime Republican congressmember from Pinellas County who died in 2013. In the first half of the 1960s, when he was a Florida state senator, Young served on the Johns Committee. That group targeted leftists as well as gay and lesbian students, faculty, and state employees. Current USF student Dania Zatuni calls that unacceptable.
We are asking of the university to change the name of the C.W. Bill Young building to one that is not associated with a legacy of homophobia.
Zatuni is a member of Tampa Bay Students for a Democratic Society, or SDS, a group best known for radical and leftist politics in the 1960s. The Johns Committee has been compared to the McCarthy hearings in Washington, D.C., which went after suspected communists and leftists. But here in Florida, Zatuni says gays and lesbians were a primary target.
C.W. Bill Young ruined many lives of professors and students in the Florida university system, so the continued veneration of the senator through the building's namesake can only be seen as support for both the red and lavender scare.
But the administration remains firm that Young's name will stay on the building. SDS member Ronnie Juarez says students met this month with USF's provost and vice provost.
What they told us was basically he has a very long legacy and they think that the Johns Committee was not a big part.
What was Bill Young's role on the Johns Committee and in the Lavender Scare? Jim Schnurr is a special collections librarian at USF St. Petersburg. He did a master's thesis on the Johns Committee.
He was a lawmaker who was a participant on the committee, but not to the point where he was orchestrating or leading any conversations.
Even though Schnurr downplays Bill Young's role on the Johns Committee, he says there's no doubt the work of the committee caused terror and ruined lives, and not only of the people it targeted.
But the intangible is also important. How many people who lived in Florida got the hell out of here? How many people who would have went to USF or other schools in Florida, either outsiders wanting to work here as faculty or students wanting to come here, chose not to come to the state because of this committee?
Another student from SDS, Elizabeth Kramer, is a transgender woman and says that a campus as diverse as USF should not honor someone involved in the persecution of people because of their sexual orientation.
There are a great variety of students ranging all across the sexual and gender spectrums, you know, especially at USF, where we have a whole office dedicated to the health and life of LGBTQI plus students on campus, you know, as well as student organizations such as Pride and the Trans Student Union. There's obviously a great variety there of those students, and this building is just, you know, a continuation of the sort of oppression that we face every day.
Kramer says there's support on campus for taking Bill Young's name off the ROTC building.
Every time we would mention this, because we have been working up to this point, all the students would respond with, "What?" I think it's a pretty common reaction to be disgusted at that sort of thing.
As the longtime chair of the House Appropriations Committee, Young is credited with helping to direct millions of federal dollars to USF. I'm Sean Canan in Tampa.
You're listening to Capitol Report on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is proposing new regulations for the Apalachicola-Chattahoochee-Flint River Basin amid pushback from Florida lawmakers. 22 members of the Florida Congressional Delegation drafted a letter to the Corps highlighting its concerns for the Apalachicola Bay. We get more on that story from Kate Payne.
Congresswoman Gwen Graham, Senators Marco Rubio, Bill Nelson, and others rallied to voice concerns about the Army Corps of Engineers' proposal. The Corps manages dam systems throughout the river basin. It extends 19,000 square miles across Georgia, Alabama, and Florida. The proposed recommendations would reflect regional growth and development, but Graham says the new plans wouldn't protect Apalachicola Bay.
It's time for the Army Corps to consider what is one of the most precious and important resources we have in Florida, and not only from an economic standpoint and from the oyster industry, but from a heritage standpoint.
Situated between the river basin and the Gulf of Mexico, the Apalachicola Bay is an ecologically diverse and sensitive area. Apalachicola riverkeeper Dan Tunsmeyer says it's the most diverse river system in North America, but the system is struggling due to increased salinity and decreased water flow.
1,300 plants, 40 reptiles, you know, different species. Those things become so stressed during a drought. In a natural drought, I mean, they're normal occurrences, but when we start lowering the flows lower than they've ever been, we can get to this sort of tipping point.
For decades, Florida and Georgia have fought over water rights. With Atlanta's booming metro area comes growing water needs and less water flowing downriver. Graham says that's where the system breaks down.
Failure of the natural flow of fresh water has increased the salinity in the bay, and that's that delicate mixture of salt and fresh water is what oysters need to grow.
Graham says the bay is a vital ecosystem and a point of pride for Floridians. She hopes the Corps will update plans to reflect the needs of those living downstream.
A solution that's in the best interest of the entire ecosystem, from Atlanta, flowing down through Georgia and Alabama into Florida and into the Gulf of Mexico. We all should be interested in considering the importance of having a healthy ecosystem.
The Corps will hold open houses throughout the region before finalizing the plan. The last open house will be held in East Point on November 5th. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And please join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.